This episode of CodeCast is brought to you by Agora Code Community. We're connecting developers one line of code at a time. For more information, visit our website. It's agoracode.community. Like us on Facebook, Agora Code Community, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at CodeAgora. This episode is also brought to you by Renegade Media, which is your leading Zambian agency for everything digital marketing.
Welcome, dear listeners, to our fourth edition of CodeCast. For our hosts, I am Cynthia Mlinga, and I'll allow the other hosts to introduce themselves.
Hey guys, I'm back once again. My name is Mukuma, and I won't bother you guys with all the intros. Just go back to our previous podcast, and you got your info there.
Hey guys, I'm James, and I'm new here. I don't think I should say much, should I?
Yes, you should, James.
Oh, guys.
Where are you coming from?
I'm coming from a computer science background. I'm a software developer by profession, and I'm into public health currently. So,
hi, listeners. My name is Astrida, more known as Mouse. You know, I'm an entrepreneur, but I'm an executive secretary by profession, and, you know, just the diversion from secretary to entrepreneurship, you know, I think it's just a great experience.
Great. We have a lot of questions.
And I just realized I didn't say my background, but I'll be like Moko Mike. Please visit our previous editions and you will know who Cynthia is. So, dear listeners, today we are talking about a topic that has been going on Twitter, it has been on Facebook, it has been on YouTube, and it is the latest thing trending, I must say. And a lot of researchers are looking into it as well. And this topic is on imposter syndrome. Sometimes it is called imposter experience or imposter phenomena. But before we dive into it, we would just like to give a brief overview of the events that have been going on in the tech industry. I will allow Mukuma to talk about one of them.
Okay, great. As per custom, so we've had a lot of stuff happening in the tech arena lately, and usually we do international news, but this time I'm so happy we're doing local. There's so much stuff that happened locally and so many of our people that are doing great stuff. Uh-huh. And most recently, AgriPredict. That was the Southern Africa what?
It was the annual Southern Africa Innovation Forum.
Okay, so if you guys don't know what this Innovation Forum is, it's basically a program that supports the growth of new businesses and strengthening innovation ecosystems and cross-border cooperation. So AgriPredict, which is a local company, is working towards strengthening or reducing risks in farming, and some of these risks include plants and animal disease. This is a Zambian startup.
Yes, it is.
Doing great things.
Great things.
So they'll be going to, is it Finland or Sweden for the slash?
Should be Sweden.
Sweden, yeah. Was it Finland? Hmm. Hold on. It's Finland.
Okay.
So they'll be going for the startup conference, which is basically part of the slash global impact accelerator, and they'll learn so much. And I'm sure when they come back, they'll be bigger than they are now.
I can't wait.
Me neither.
I'll take it up, I guess. So, in other news, we had a deep learning endeavor in South Africa in a town called Stellenbosch, and we had a lot of African data scientists and experts in machine learning come together in one place. I should say it was a geeky atmosphere.
And we all love geeky atmospheres, believe me.
And it was great to see some of the big guys, like Jeff Dean from Google AI, and seeing Mustafa, the likes of my favorite female who's timid, and then there's also Nyaleng, and there were a lot of happenings, and I had the privilege of being one of the speakers who was talking about mathematics for machine learning there. And I'll talk about a bit about it because I did face some imposter syndrome. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But on good news, we had one of our own Zambian guys, Yasin. He won an award for the Matai Impact Award for his app called Sogolo, and it was amazing. He actually even got a standing
ovation.
Yeah. And people were actually very happy with his idea because they believe it's not just for Zambia, but it can be used across the continent.
Yeah, that's true. When I saw that, I was really happy. Like, I was literally jumping for joy because it's so amazing to see so many of our local people doing, getting recognition for all the stuff they're doing and growing, or basically erasing borders. Because I've noticed, like, we usually put ourselves in a box, and this box is our borders.
Oh, yeah.
And we never leave the country, even with our ideas. So it's really interesting, and it's really amazing to see people, like, make the transition from the idea to the actual product to now transcending borders.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
I must say, embarrassing enough, I did cry because I was right there.
That's not embarrassing.
And everyone was
you
like,
can cry if you
want. From Zambia, I was like, yes. Your boy is doing good. I'm like, you have no idea. Yes. Then, yeah, I was about to do a drum roll.
You want me to do the drum roll? I can do
Please
the drum roll.
Do a drum roll for me.
Drum roll.
Thank you. So, as we all know, I am one of the advocates for female intake in Zambia. And apparently I'm getting some particular nickname, which I shall not mention.
Please mention the nickname. I didn't hear about this.
Nah, I shall not mention it. Ask me the next one. Yes. Yes.
You know what? We're doing a podcast tomorrow.
It could be tomorrow, yes. So, we had a week long of Women in Tech Africa Week events. We actually had an opportunity to work with an organization called Women in Tech Africa.
Okay.
And one of our sponsors was also the Facebook developer Circles. They put in some funds for us to actually go ahead. We also had our own Intercontinental Hotel offering us a wonderful venue. And we got to interact with young mothers who dropped out of school because they don't have finances, or their parents said, hey, you've gotten pregnant. We don't see the sense of taking you back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And we taught them ICT skills. We showed them how to market their businesses on Facebook and how to use other digital tools that people are using, even mobile money. So others were still depending on when they sell something, let's say on credit, and they go around collecting the money. And we told them, why don't you use mobile money? It's very easy. You have a SIM card, there's MTN, there's Airtel, there's Zamtel. So,
yeah.
I mean, why not? And it's easier, you save energy. And I had an opportunity of seeing a first computer user. She actually had issues pressing some of the buttons. I remember her hands were actually shaking, and I had to tell her, you know what, the keyboard was meant to be pressed, so press. And she was like, since I'm no longer, like, well, I won't spoil it. I just said, you know what, just press. If it's 100 times, just press it. And she jumped out of joy, finding out that now she has a Gmail account. And she's like, I didn't know what anymore Gmail is. And it was quite amazing to see that we made some impact.
Yeah.
And we also taught girls as well who are from the underprivileged homes. Others actually are already young mothers at the age of 13, 15, which is, I must say, we really need to look into this and find ways of reducing this number. But all in all, it was a wonderful week. We closed off yesterday with now women who are actually already in the tech industry, but we also attracted women that were coming from the academic industry and they wanted to see how they can use IT in their field.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I can go on and on.
That sounds like fun. You know what that reminds me of? How we take for granted so many of the small things. Like, I've had an email address for the longest time and I'm one of the privileged people, and it's one of those things that's just... It's an email address.
Yes.
Yeah, it's nothing special.
It's a must have.
You don't have an email address?
Yeah,
it's a must have.
Shame. So it's interesting. That's one of the, because I attended the Saturday event, and I really appreciated that. I think it brought me from a place where I was right back down to thinking about how I am privileged and I should share what I have.
Oh, yeah.
Basically.
We do need to share.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
So now, are we ready?
I am ready.
Oh, okay.
James, are you ready?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually turning my phone on so I can check. So I'm good. I'm good.
I'm so ready.
Great.
I like that. So today we're talking about imposter syndrome. So I have been seeing a lot of people saying, I'm going under imposter syndrome. let me not lie, the first time I saw the words, I was like, what is this syndrome? Is it somebody trying to put on a mask and come out as somebody else? Or are they stealing people's identities? I didn't know exactly what it was until I read up and I found out, I've gone through it several times without knowing the name. So it is imposter syndrome. So giving a brief description, imposter syndrome, I'll give an example like mine. At the deep learning Indaba. Yes, I had to clear my throat. So I went into the theater room where I was doing my presentation. And I didn't know that in my class, some of the professors and some of the people that work at Google would actually come in and see me present. So immediately I saw one of them walk in and I know him because I've been reading some of his work. I just froze. I was like, Cynthia, you're not supposed to be here, clearly. Because technically I've only been doing machine learning for 6 months. I'm like, what am I doing here? This guy has been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And I just froze.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot some of the formulas in mathematics that I didn't know. I could not explain. My throat got so dry. And I had to just politely excuse myself and say, I need to go drink water. And I went in front of the mirror. I told myself, Cynthia, you gotta do this. If you don't do this, shame on you. And I had to go back and start doing it. So those are some of the examples. Well, it is one of the examples of imposter syndrome where you feel you're not worthy of something. So from my fellow hosts, in your own words, how would you define imposter syndrome for our listeners?
That's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
Can I, maybe I can start?
Yes,
sure. Well, it's one of those things for me where I can define it as the feeling of being unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
The failure to acknowledge your own relevance in a particular situation.
Yeah.
And also just a lack of self-worth, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I could describe it like that. And in terms of examples, I feel like this is something I go through all the time. Even simple things as just doing our usual podcast recordings. Like, people will never notice from when we start our conversations and what we're actually, when they see the final product, it's so difficult for them to see the before we start recording.
Yes.
Like, it's always a battle. Feeling like we don't understand the topic, or
mm-hmm.
we haven't read enough, we
mm-hmm.
haven't done enough research. Like, that's an example.
Yeah. As for me, because I'm in, they call, some people they call me Miss Perfectionist, you know, I'm not going to define it, but I'm already getting it.
Just being here.
Already I'm imagining like there's 1,000 of people, you know, listening to me, and I don't want to make a mistake. You know, when I make a mistake, I'm thinking about what they're going to talk about me,
mm.
you know, and then it just gives me that lack of confidence, you know, to speak out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. James.
Yeah. Well, I agree with all of you. and it's a same feeling I have as well, because as a programmer, you know how it is when it comes to writing code.
Oh, yeah.
There's always this feeling I get, like, I have to be better, or I'm not good enough. And every time I'm seeing someone do something, it might be basic stuff that I know, but I still feel like I am not able to do what that person is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I'm not supposed to be in this place in the first place. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I should, like, try something else out. And then, yeah, every time I'm making progress, even though you get applauded for it, I find myself thinking, like, maybe I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Or maybe, like,
they don't know the
they
background.
They don't know. Or maybe I just, like, deceive them. And they're, like, the ones.
You know, just something. He mentioned something just now about writing even basic code.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever seen someone's code and said, that code is much cleaner than mine?
Yes.
He names his variables much better than me.
Than mine, yeah.
Then someone else comes and tells you the same thing.
Like, you write your code cleaner than mine. Like, you don't know what you're talking about.
No.
No,
you should see James's code.
Yeah.
He's better than me. You know, stuff like that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you think it only affects a certain maybe age group, or maybe people from a certain cultural background, or it is across all diversity?
No, there's no discrimination. I don't think it's something that discriminates. I feel like it may be more pronounced in different cultures and depending on your background,
yeah,
and whatever, all that sort of stuff, but it's not something that diminishes with age. I read something that was talking about how sometimes, and I believe in this 100%,
okay,
you are allowed to have an imposter moment.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're allowed to feel like an imposter. You're just not allowed to let it take over,
oh, yeah,
your entire being. Like, you should immediately snap yourself out of it.
Uh-huh.
We all develop techniques or whatever that help us and so on and so forth. And what you should strive for is not having an imposter life, basically.
Okay.
But I don't think it stops at any point. Just because you grow older.
It continues.
I'm a dancer, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, it's such a diverse panel today.
I'm a professional salsa dancer.
She taught me salsa.
She taught you salsa?
She's one of the people that taught me salsa.
Guys, you know, I can't dance for shit.
Can you walk?
You can walk.
Come on.
No.
If you can walk,
if you can
walk,
you can
dance.
Okay,
but the thing is, like, he's a special case.
Okay.
He's my friend, but he's a very special case.
Okay.
So it would take some time.
Okay, so I'm a dancer, and I remember when I started dancing in public, the first time I danced, you know, it was at Sundays, they were launching some vehicle, you know, and then we had to perform there. Trust me, our performance was delayed because I developed that imposter syndrome plus phobia, which led to diarrhea.
Literally, that was crazy.
Yeah, that was the worst case.
I've been dancing for 10 years.
Damn.
But every time I'm dancing, I'm going on stage. Before I go on stage, like, I always have it. So I don't think it ends at some point. It just continues. But of course, we've mastered the technique, you know, how to overcome it. You go on stage and then you forget that there's anyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
So you just do your thing and then off the stage you're smiling like, yes, I did it. You know, but it goes in some people, they never gain the courage to do anything in front of people.
Yeah,
even in front of two people, it's always difficult.
Yeah. And you know, like, the three of us are coming from like a very techie background.
Yes.
And this is something we see all the time. Like, we are talking about our own personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this conversation at the Women in Tech meetup with regards to how we always never feel like we are
enough
as developers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, and people never really talk about it. People suffer alone, like Emmanuel mentioned over the weekend. Like, people suffer alone, they never talk about it. And as a result, people never go for meetups or conferences or whatever events because they're afraid of finding out that they're not the rock star programmer.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and actually, there is a term for that where you know you secretly feel you're not good enough.
Mm.
It's called the pluralistic ignorance. So not knowing that your neighbor actually has
the
same feeling, but because you don't openly talk about it to say, I have this struggle, you don't know that they also have it, and you feel, I am the only one. These guys are doing so far better, and I don't know what I'm even doing here. Yeah.
Can I give an example of something I'm going through right now? That's like a really good example of imposter syndrome.
Uh-huh.
My GitHub account, I've got like maybe 15 private repos, which I'm afraid of sharing because I don't want people to look at my code.
But then it shows that you're not contributing to much of the projects, isn't it? No, I finished it off because that's what I am going through.
Yeah.
And you find most of the clients, when I'm asking them if they can hire me for something, and they tell me, can we see your
work?
And I'm like, on my GitHub, I do have private repos, but I can't show it because once I show it, somebody might take up the idea and even beat me to it at finishing it. So now the contributions show that I've really contributed to very few projects, but yet I have a lot in
a
the
lot
background.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on, yeah. Oh.
Well, can you share them?
If I can share them
with me,
you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah. I feel like we should do a podcast on like the legalities and coders knowing that there's such a thing as an
interview. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so considering we all, well, we might be techie, but we have different daily tasks we do. Like for me, it's mostly project or product management, where it's mostly running the sprints, gathering the requirements, prototyping, and I rarely get to actually code. What I do eventually, but it's not as much as I would like it. Then there's somebody else who posts it, like, every morning. They even know that, oh, my job is I get the requirements from somebody already prototyped and everything, and I just now code them.
Yeah.
So we are still different in some kind of way, and that being mentioned, that means we have I don't know if there are different levels of imposter syndrome, but what I'm trying to get at is I'm assuming we all have
different experiences.
Yes, and we've all come up with different ways to reduce the imposter syndrome, or to actually relax enough to still continue with the task that is triggering the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
My question is, what are those things that you have trained yourself to do in such moments?
That's interesting.
Dig a grave.
You literally dig a grave. But how many graves would you have dug?
Oh, geez, I think I'd have filled like the whole cemetery by now. I think even this week, I'm definitely sure I'm going to have like 7 different graves for myself. That's just how bad it is. I don't know. I'll start. I'm, like I said before when I was introducing myself, I'm a tech guy in public health. This is completely new for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I never knew anything about public health, and the demand that comes with it in like from a tech background is a bit heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm constantly reading, researching, trying to find solutions and everything. And then I come up with ideas and I want to like pitch them out. But because I feel I'm inadequate enough in that particular area, I can't. But then when someone comes and reads my notes and they go like, yo, do this, like it's actually very helpful.
Uh-huh.
So I think the first thing would be to try sharing with people so they give you that confidence in yourself. Because I think the same imposter phenomenon comes from like feeling the lack of like self-worth and confidence in you. So I guess sharing for me works mostly. So
Astrida?
Well, with my line of work, I speak to a lot of people every day. So I think for me it's becoming very easy, because the moment I leave home, I know I'm going to talk to so number of people. And then we also have Speakers Bureau,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they help you to gain confidence in yourself. So I've got support system when it comes to that.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but, you know, as a person, because even when we do Speakers Bureaus, there are still people who can't stand in front of people, because my job requires me presenting, doing a lot of presentations,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then if you are not confident enough with what you're talking about,
you won't sell the product.
Exactly. You know, how do you expect 1,000 people to believe what you're talking about if you don't have the self-confidence to start with? So I've learned to, you know, be my own self-boss, to say, you know, even if I make mistakes, I'm still going to carry on. You know, and people, as long as what I'm talking about, people are going to listen and pick one or two things, then the next day to be a better day, and I've improved.
You're talking about not being scared to make mistakes. I remember, is it Emmanuel yesterday who actually quoted something to say, the greatest mistake you'd ever make is fearing to make one.
Yes.
Yeah.
The moment you stop fearing making mistakes, you actually then go further, because you keep on trying, and Nkuma?
What was the question again?
What you have learned or trained yourself to do to reduce the impact of imposter syndrome?
Well, apart from digging graves,
we're still digging.
Well, we start digging, really. No, honestly, I do start digging. It's just that I never finish the grave. By the time I get to like a quarter, it's supposed to be 6 feet, yeah?
Yes.
What's a quarter of 6 feet?
It should be like 2.
We need math lessons. 1.5. Thank you. We need math lessons. So when I get to like a particular point, I feel like I just pull myself out of it. Like,
mm-hmm.
Usually my technique is to see everything from outside. I have a friend of mine that always says, the people playing chess may never see the moves better than the person looking from the outside.
Yeah.
So he always tells me that, especially when I'm complaining about stuff. Like,
mm-hmm.
he'll tell me what to do, and when I argue, he'll tell me the same thing. You can't see what I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah.
So listen to me. So I take that and apply it. Just
mm-hmm.
step out of the situation and look at it. And then from then on, everything just starts clicking. Like, I see how this is actually a big deal. It's something I can do. Then
mm-hmm.
I'll break it down and then start attacking it, like, little by little. I don't know if you noticed this, but at the Four Loop launch,
mm-hmm.
I had a bad case of imposter syndrome.
I didn't even notice it.
I had a bad case of imposter syndrome. I actually missed a complete section in the beginning because I was still shivering.
Ah.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it. See? You are good. Actually, I did not notice it.
So, like, I noticed that as time goes on and I keep doing it,
mm-hmm.
I get better at it and I gain composure.
Nice. It's funny that you're saying you actually had...
So you don't know him that well.
No, but then he presented it so well that no one would have noticed that.
I'm taking a compliment, guys. Thank
you. I'm giving feedback.
Thank you for the feedback. I like it.
For me, I usually do is I'll take a few breaths and just step back as well. But the other thing I've told myself is constantly get feedback. So even at the deep learning interview, I took time to spot some of the people that were in my class,
yeah.
and actually took time to ask them, how did you find the session? Was it okay? Was I elaborating things good enough for you to get them? Did I manage to balance up? Because it was a class mixed with beginners.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are experts. So
yeah.
it was quite difficult to balance the two. One topic I would talk about maybe very basic stuff, and then the professionals would be like, I'm bored. Then I go a bit advanced, and then
yeah.
now the beginners will just look totally
confused.
Lost. So I was a bit...
Like I would.
Yeah, I didn't know which was which. So, but then the thing is, through my feedback, I realized that I actually did not do as bad as I thought I had done, because
yeah.
I thought... Geez, Cynthia, you messed it all up. Like, you just really messed it all up. If they don't call you again for any talk, this is the reason.
Yeah.
You know why.
Is it too late to give feedback again? Because I was there. I actually enjoyed your talk and what you shared at the DL. The learning window.
You were there?
Should we
be
yeah.
drums?
He's joking, right?
I don't know.
You were there?
I was.
He's kidding, right?
Cynthia, I just said that.
You were the first speaker.
Yes, I was amongst the first speakers.
you were actually the first one.
Okay.
Cynthia, is that an imposter syndrome?
Yes, I am going through imposter syndrome right now. It's funny. Yes, I'm going through it. Well, there were about four people that actually came to me to say, we hope to see you for the next one. I'm like, why would you want to see me for the next one? I just messed up the session. And they're like, no, we actually enjoyed it. Because
yeah.
what I think I acted quick. What I did is the first time I was explaining, and I realized, okay, this is not going so well.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to turn all my examples into exercises for them to work into groups. And I sort of just stepped back to give myself enough time to breathe in and breathe out and recompose myself.
Okay.
Which was, I think, worked out well. Okay.
I like the part about feedback. I feel like it's something that I'm not very good at, collecting feedback, because
mm-hmm.
I'm afraid of getting negative reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't like negative reviews. But I feel like I should start embracing some of it, because it might actually be constructive.
Yeah. It's important to get like negative feedback, because in that way you get to know exactly where like you've made your mistakes,
mm-hmm.
where you need to improve. So you should get more feedback. I'm advising you to do that. don't be afraid of people's comments and critics.
Because you never know what mistakes you make.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Dear listeners, we'll just go for a quick break and we'll be back continuing with our topic on imposter syndrome. We'll now tackle it in a different aspect. Yes?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
This episode of CodeCast is brought to you by Agora Code Community. We're connecting developers one line of code at a time. For more information, visit our website. It's agoracode.community. Like us on Facebook, Agora Code Community. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Code Agora. This episode is also brought to you by Renegade Media, which is your leading Zambian agency for everything digital marketing.
Welcome, dear listeners. Thank you very much for staying tuned. We shall continue with our topic on imposter syndrome. To my co-host, so just to remind you, I have James, I have Astrida, and I have Smooth Nkuma. And I am Cynthia. So we were talking about imposter syndrome. And before we went on break, feedback was mentioned. Just to my co-host, what would you advise our listeners in terms of if you want to receive feedback? How would you go about it? And if you are in a position of giving feedback to somebody, what are the things that you usually consider? Do you go straight telling them the truth even when it is extremely negative, or do you sometimes sugarcoat it, or you sugarcoat all the way?
I think, okay, you can start.
Okay, Cynthia, I'm so happy you asked that question. For me, I believe in telling the truth the way it is. Of course, I'm not going to be mean about it, but if you've done something that I want you to work on,
mm-hmm.
or anyone wants to work on, I'll tell them point blank to say, you know what, we need to work on this. This one was, you know, and all that. Some people, they take offense
mm-hmm.
when you tell them the truth. But I think feedback that is going to change and grow you better
mm-hmm.
is better than feedback which is not going to be given to you.
That's true.
It's well put.
I'm saying that because she saved my life on lipstick.
That is a good thing, Cynthia. I'm thanking Astrida. For me, I'd say I'm still learning both sides, giving feedback and receiving feedback. I think I've cycled between many different methods of giving feedback,
mm-hmm.
and I should say that sometimes I've been a little too brutal, too harsh. I believe you should tell the truth, no matter what, but sometimes you have to also gauge someone's, what can I say, character.
Mm-hmm.
So like you end up sugarcoating it?
Not really. What I mean is, if you know, it depends. If you know someone well, you know how best to administer feedback, for example. If you know someone reacts very negatively to being told the truth in a particular way,
don't sugarcoat it.
Adjust the administration of the medicine.
Mm-hmm. But what if it's something that you actually know? If you sugarcoat, you're actually messing them up in that they won't grow.
There's times I'm really brutal, regardless of how you feel about it, knowing that there's no other way of telling you this.
Mm.
You just have to hear it straight. If you get upset...
So at the end of the day, it's best to tell the truth and let that person take it the way they want to take it.
I don't know. You don't want to crush someone beyond, like, crush them...
Beyond recovery.
You want that person to try again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's your main objective, for them to grow. Not so they...
feel like that, life is over and they should not do anything. So.
Yeah. I don't know. We can talk about it. We can discuss it. But I feel... you should really gauge the situation. Like, even with the environment and circumstances, I'm still learning how to administer the feedback, because there's been times when I've told someone the truth and they have just given up completely and not grown. I want to see as many people grow as possible. So how best do I do it so I can capture as many people as possible? And so on and so forth. And then in terms of receiving feedback, I feel like I don't ask for it enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always wait for someone to give their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work on it, but I never reach out to people to actually get the feedback. Yeah. So that's an area I really need to work on. Yeah.
Well, I'm not gonna lie. I don't usually tell people like, "Yo, you messed up. Yo, you did this. Yo, you nah." I kind of treat people like fragile instruments most of the time. So it's not sugarcoating.
It's sugarcoating.
It's not. No. That's sugarcoating. It's not sugarcoating. It's being gentle. I'm going to tell them exactly how they went wrong, how I think they went wrong. And I would suggest ways they could like do something better. I would not just go and shame them like, "Yo, you did this wrong. Never do that again. Like, I wasted my time."
Maybe we should define what telling the truth is, because I feel like we might have all expressed our own versions of how we feel like we give people honest feedback, and we should start by defining what that means for each of us, I guess. Cynthia, maybe.
Me telling the truth is you wear shoes that are white, you wear a trouser that's purple, you wear a shirt that's orange, and then you wear a cape that's, I don't know, whatever color it is.
Looking like a rainbow.
Telling the truth, blunt truth, is me telling your man you look like a rainbow. Where can I find the god of pot? The god of pot. Yeah. Like,
with the leprechaun?
Yes. Because this is like, okay. For me, that is telling the blunt truth.
Okay.
Me sort of sugarcoating it would be like, it's summer.
You look very colorful.
It's summer.
Oh,
it's
the
season of color.
You would have mistaken like the weather.
You know what I'd consider sugarcoating is not exactly saying, justifying it and say, "Oh, it's summer, you can just be like, boss, what's that? You know? Let's go try something else." You know? Yeah. Like, you won't bluntly say, "Ah, but boss, you look like a rainbow." Boss, you look ugly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's, I think that was based on that example, that's how I'd differentiate sugarcoating.
Well, I guess again, like, situations like matter. Like, sometimes it's necessary for you to actually like be blunt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then for me, like, most of the time, like, for example, like, your rainbow attire, I just be like, "I think we can try, like, you know, something else, you know? I don't think that attire, like, looks so good on you right now."
You guys are good people.
They are.
I would... Unfortunately, I am the kind, if I don't burst out laughing... And then later on, I was like, "What were you thinking?" I guess that's an area I need to work on. But
I feel like we should do a survey on this one. Like, we really need to get like a completely broad opinion on how people like to receive feedback. Because for me, I just feel like it depends on the situation and the type of person you're dealing with.
Oh,
also.
Yeah.
Because there's people that are just volatile. Like, the moment you say something negative, even in the slightest,
they just go
shut down, you know? And if this is your friend, you want to see them grow, you obviously adjust the way you administer your feedback.
But so again, I think it depends on, if you're friends, it depends on the type of
friendship that you have.
Because, my friendship with Astrid, she can even tell me in the most blunt way. Like I mentioned, lipstick. She's the kind when she sees me, I don't wear lipstick, and she just bring out the lipstick. And she just say, "Post us in my phone." You know? Because she's told me several times that I should put on lipstick, you know? I am like, okay. And I'll laugh and I'll take it, because that's the type of friendship we have. But there are other friends, if they tell me that, I'll be like, "What?
You're not even that close to me.
Why
are you telling me?"
Yeah.
That.
So I guess it also goes as deep as the type of friendship you have. Anyway, it would be a bigger topic for another
and also,
day. And
it also depends on how people get to receive feedback.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you've spoken to this person on several times, you give them feedback, and then they're all sulky. They don't even want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meaning they're not ready to improve themselves in certain areas.
I guess so.
Yeah.
That's a valid point. Mm. I guess you can only do so much.
But if someone is not willing to take it, then you just start laughing at the rainbow, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Let it rain.
You're a product manager. How do you tell someone they're writing bad code?
You just had to hit me with that.
No, like, I just remembered.
Well, the many times that, the few times, or the many few, I don't know, anyway, yeah. So the times that I've had to tell someone that they're not writing code, because I know it's a work environment,
yeah.
I kind of had to really tone down a bit. I remember there was one intern they brought for me at when I was still working for the Manix. I was teaching him the back end development, and then you know, I'll tell him to do A, B, C, D, and then next minute he's bringing me something else, and I'm like, inside I'll be like, just, you know, tell him, you know what, can you really pull up your socks? But then I noticed he was, like you said, he was the kind who was a soft heart kind. So I would eventually just sit him down to say, what do you really want in your life? Do you really want to be a back end developer? And I remember there was a time he said, I love music. I was like, then do music. Because, like, if you're not seeing your performance improving in the coding, then just step back. If you love music, go do the music. Do something that you love. Though there was a time, yes, it was a bad day for me. And I hadn't slept because we were rushing towards the deadline. And he didn't deliver. And I sat him down. I was like, you know what? This is messing me up, and you're messing the entire company up. So if you want to stay here,
pull up your socks.
Mm.
Pull up your socks. And you have to actually, I think maybe I was a bit harsh because I told him he had to deliver that thing that very same day.
Did you deliver though?
Kind of. Eventually, I had to finish it off.
Oh, I see.
Yes, it was a hard decision, I must say.
Did you fire him? After. Sounds like you did.
I don't think we should get into that.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience. I guess. Not really very similar. I wouldn't say I was managing someone. It's more or less asking someone to help you with something and then just doing checks on whether they're actually doing the work they're supposed to be doing. And it was very interesting because this is someone who learns a different way from the way I learn.
Uh-huh.
And someone takes that time picking up small principles, like the basic principles
uh-huh.
of doing a particular thing. And you go a step further and you give them the resources that they need, like in terms of if it's videos, if it's the tools, if
uh-huh.
it's the, you know, stuff like that. And 2-3 weeks later, someone still hasn't maybe written sensible lines
of
code.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that time, I just cut everything off. Like I just said, nope. Block.
Like Regina.
Block. And I think I've learned from that as well. And yeah, people are being willing to receive feedback and stuff.
Okay. So, another issue I feel maybe we should talk about. Do you think from the mentors that you've maybe associated with in any area of your life, do you think we have mentors that are open enough to actually show us that they too, despite being mentors and being advanced in their career, they've also had incidences of imposter syndrome? And are they open enough to actually at least share what they did in that instance? Or is it mostly us teaching ourselves, first being burned several times, then training ourselves?
The simple answer is no. At least from my experience, most of the mentors I don't even call them mentors. I feel like it was a relationship
mm-hmm.
that wasn't clearly defined. It's not like a mentor-mentee relationship, you know. You're learning from someone.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't feel like I've ever met someone that's very open about their struggles in this area. And would it help me if they were more open?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it would, because if I'm a young developer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, technology changes every day,
mm-hmm.
like every single day. I'm learning Angular today, and Angular 4, 5, 6, 7 are coming out in a space of 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's very difficult to, you know,
to
catch up and stuff like that. And you're seeing someone that's been doing this for 10 years, and, you know, you look at where they are, and you would like to relate to their struggles as well. It's not magic that they got there. You understand it's not magic, but then
mm-hmm.
you're going through the struggles. So I think it would help.
For me, he's actually told me several times. Oh, I've got a personal mentor, stroke coach. He, you know, there are times when I feel like I don't want to do it anymore, you know, because you're getting so much pressure from different angles. And then he'll just go like, you know what, Astrida, I used to be like this. And then I did this to help me work on what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so happy that I've got somebody who is mentoring me, who has gone through certain challenges that I might be facing,
mm-hmm.
and is able to tell me the solution based on the experience that he's gone through. So for me, yeah, my mentor has gone through, you know, different things, and when I look back, I say, okay, maybe I'm actually better than he was. You know, for me to be where I am, maybe I'm better than he was, and then it's easy for me to actually work on my flaws, you know, because I know I'm not the only one who's
mm-hmm.
gone through it.
Yeah.
Even the best people out there, they've gone through it. Yeah.
I think not necessarily a mentor thing. It was usually like, it's just colleagues, you know, like, but people you find there who are already accustomed to the work culture, for example, and they look at what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and they just want to like help you out so that you be like them. Not exactly, but like you grow up to like blend into the system they are in as well. When it comes to them sharing like their weak points, that's never happened. That's never happened. But they have been people who come up to you and just tell you like, okay, I think you should do this in this way.
Uh-huh.
They will not give like a past experience.
Uh-huh.
Very rare moments when they actually do. All they do is just like point you in a direction where you will go get your stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Unfortunately, my experience as well with a few mentors is that they would prefer coming out as angels and perfectionists, like everything was just okay. And I sometimes feel I'd really enjoy it if they told me some of their weak points and how they came out of them. Because then it will give me an idea to say, oh, so they went through it and I am going through it. So if they can come out of it, I can come out of it as well. But where they just keep on pointing you to something and they're not telling you that they went through it is, well, they might be helping, yes, but you tend to think these guys are so perfect. It actually adds on to imposter syndrome, if I'm not mistaken, because then now you start thinking these guys are so perfect. I'm not even close to that.
Yeah.
So will I actually make it to the level that they are at? So I think most mentors should really work on that. They change how they do the mentorship aspect. They actually do tell us there are also weak points that they faced and how they came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But me being a mentor, I guess I should also employ that in my teaching, especially the girls that I interact with. Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much, my co-host, that's Astrida, Jen, San, Mukuma. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for staying tuned, and I hope you have actually enjoyed our discussion on imposter syndrome. And for me, Cynthia, my last remarks is, in everything that you do, you should remember you're talented, you're capable, and you belong. And if you do face imposter syndrome, don't feel like you're alone, where a lot of us, I mean, even Albert Einstein went through it, even my favorite poet, Maya Angelou, actually also went through it, even after publishing so many books and poetry. For my host, I would like you to just give us a quick closing remark, or advice, or shout out to our listeners, and maybe you could also share your Twitter handles as well, in case anybody liked how you presented. Yes. Oh no. But dear listeners, this is not a hookup, please. Yes, thank you.
Please.
I know people can't see what's happening in the studio, but I've just seen James panic. Do you want to know why he's panicking?
Why is he panicking?
He has a complicated handle on Twitter.
Exactly.
He's like Elias.
Oh, yeah. You and Elias.
If anyone wants to know what Elias' handle is, please, you always have to go back and listen to the end of the podcast.
Yes.
We have to spell it for you.
Or you should ask one of us on Twitter. We text it to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Isn't that complicated, though?
Say it then.
It's
without looking at it.
It's at capital J underscore MES207.
Why do you make life difficult?
Hey. So that people don't find you easily?
I have no idea.
Yeah?
Say that again.
It's at J A underscore MES2207.
Please say that again.
Oh, no, see, you texted you.
I'll just text it to you. It's not that hard.
Okay. Straight.
My last remarks. You know, when it comes to imposter syndrome, everyone has gone through it. But believe in yourself. Believe that you can do better than those people that you think are actually the best. You know, when you just overcome and gain yourself confidence. Yeah, you can do better. You can do better than you can do, you know. Just have that confidence in yourself.
Sound like a motivational speech. Jeez, I'm I am so motivated.
I'm glad.
If it's good, we're motivating each other just right here.
Mm, imagine the listeners, you know. My Twitter hand, I've got a Twitter account, but I don't use it because it usually brings issues.
We need to recruit her.
Yeah. Or you can do Facebook.
Yeah. My Facebook is my business account anyway, but my Facebook name is Mouse Malala Astrida. And on Instagram, I'm Mouse Astrida.
Great. Okay, my turn. Closing remarks?
Yeah,
James, have you given your closing remarks?
He's too nervous about the Twitter handle.
So stressful, guys. It's so stressful. I think you guys have summed it up already. I think the best thing is everyone goes through the same imposter syndrome. You're not alone, and it's not a medical
condition.
Mm, yes. So it's definitely like defeatable. I think the best thing is just to know your worth,
mm-hmm.
and trust that worth.
Yes.
That way you move forward.
Amen.
That sounds like you're preaching, huh? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I guess for me, from a personal perspective and the stuff I've been through, and I guess it's a combination of three things. There's genuine times when we don't know something.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand that it's okay not to know something.
Mm-hmm.
I've been writing code for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
There's still stuff that I don't know.
Same here.
And a newbie who's been writing code for 2 weeks can know more than me in a particular area, maybe even all the areas, you know? So it's also about understanding that and not letting that defeat you. You learn as much as you can. Don't compare yourself to others as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just do you. Understand the level you're at, like James is saying, and then just push on, man. Just push on. Sawbones on Twitter, that's Kenna and Uma on Facebook and GitHub. We are still learning to be consistent. And if you guys have any feedback, if you guys have anything you want to tell us, we've got a Twitter account. It's at Codecast. ZM. So just shoot us any feedback you have in the DM or even on the timeline. Everybody can see, but it's okay because, you know, we want all the feedback. We don't have a Facebook page yet, but when we do, you can shoot us feedback there as well. If you're too uncomfortable doing that, you can DM at Python Khaleesi on
yes.
Twitter or me, and we'll definitely respond. And anyone that wants to be on the show, please feel free. Open platform. Just get in touch. That's it.
Thank you. Till next time.
We're out.
Yes.
Peace.
This episode of Codecast is brought to you by Agora Code Community. We're connecting developers one line of code at a time. For more information, visit our website. It's agoracode.community. Like us on Facebook, Agora Code Community. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Code Agora. This episode is also brought to you by Renegade Media, which is your leading Zambian agency for everything digital marketing.